they, those old banking networks, allow this laundering of dope money to happen through their banks and don't take action, which he claims he would do.
Well, I mean, what he's done is he's taken some things which actually are facts and put, said them in a way that makes them sound ridiculous. Because of the banking laws in England, it is... especially British banking concerns and British offshore banking concerns have been deeply involved in money laundering. In fact, some of their branches set up in Miami are involved in it. We're just now beginning to see how this stuff works. But the other thing that ought to be said is these people who make the billions from cocaine also finance right-wing governments. You know why? Because as long as the right-wing government is in operation, their drugs are going to be illegal. And as long as they're illegal, they're going to make more profits. It is so twisted.
Well, like the pornography racket.
That's right.
Well, but what if LaRouche is taking on this issue? That's, I mean, the only politician who's doing that, that's commendable, right?
No, I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that Lyndon LaRouche is commendable by any stretch of the imagination. I believe, and although he hasn't been convicted yet, that the whole business with the
credit cards
and the rest of that scam, that's not commendable. You know, that's the ends justifies the means. That's not commendable.
Right, but what if certain people have a control over the media and can distort the public's perception of LaRouche, and that there are even people infiltrating his organization to do the credit fraud, if he's the only one taking on this most present, pressing problem that you predicted or that you see coming?
Well, I don't think that he's really taking it on. I don't see him taking it on. I see him stating some facts that, you know, any trend spotter could state those facts if you saw it. I mean, you could have, the way I arrived at it was, I just start with a premise, follow the money. You know, the old Iran-Contra, follow the money. Now, if somebody's got money, what do you do with it? Okay, answer number one, you go for power. Now, where do you get the power? Now, power comes from might. The might is either going to be in large armaments or in large armies. Now, how could a man with a buck in his hand to spend, who wanted power, where is he going to get an army? The answer is simple. Any slum. Mm. And then, just by chance, last night, I talked with this guy who had been in Brazil. He said, that's what they're doing down there. Okay, fine. Now, Lyndon LaRouche may see this same trend, okay? I don't see Lyndon LaRouche out there fighting it. I see Lyndon LaRouche doing a credit card scam. That's what I see.
All right.
If I had other information, I would see something else. I don't.
Right, but you're right.
I've seen LaRouche on television. I've seen him being interviewed, and he does not come across to me as a guy that I would trust at all.
All right.
I just, you know, I don't buy Lyndon LaRouche.
Do you see... I mean, you're expressing concern, and we talked about it earlier, this trend, this is a political concern of you that you wrestle with daily, of how much do you want to take it on or deal with it. Do you see how, do you have any personal strategies or commitments to stopping that, or do you think the force is so large that what could you do?
Well, the only way that I can see to reduce the influence of something that would behave like a government, cross international boundaries, but not be a government in the sense that people elected it. Mm-hmm. The only way that you can reduce the influence of that creeping menace is to legalize the substances and cut their economic base. Now let's talk about the drug problem. Drugs do not become a problem until the person who uses the drugs does something to you or does something that that would affect your life that you don't want to have happen to you, like an airline pilot who crashes because he was full of drugs. That's a drug problem. I believe people have the right to commit suicide. You can stick a gun in your mouth, you can stick a needle in your arm, you can do whatever you want, but you own your own body. You know, I think you do. Drugs become a problem when a person who uses them turns into an asshole. And they also become a problem when the person who manufactures and distributes them turns into a politician. That's the drug problem. Now, you want to fight the drug problem, you have to be realistic about what the problem is. The substance itself is not immoral. Cocaine, without cocaine, you're going to have a hell of a time at the dentist office. You can't just say, we have to burn every coca plant. Otherwise, no more Novocaine burn.
The dental hygiene dilemma.
Yeah. So there are things that you have to consider. The fine little points. The problem is that the public gets saturated with the rhetoric about just say no to drugs, there's a drug problem, you know, this and that, and it puts it into a context where it becomes a moral menace. It's not a moral problem. It is an economic problem. It is a social problem. It is a mental health problem. And it can be a matter of physical danger to you when you have people who control, who are in situations where they have life and death control over other people, are users and they can endanger the life, or a physician who might use drugs who might give you the wrong kind of an operation, or different ways the person who uses the chemical can fuck up your life. I mean, that's what you got to look out for. But the substance itself is neither here nor there. And the person has as much right to drink a beer as he does to use the substance. The only difference is we have prohibition now of these certain substances. If you'll let your mind drift back to the time there was prohibition against alcohol, think of what happened. Remember, those who forget history are doomed to repeat it. Prohibition, without Carrie Nations, every Italian in the mafia would be out of business right now. It was Carrie Nations who put them into business because it was the law of supply and demand. People wanted to drink beer, they wanted to drink gin, and a few guys said, hey, I don't care, I'm going to supply the demand. And they became billionaires. And they eventually found out, and people got killed for years, all during Prohibition. The machine gun was busy, you know. People were dying because they wanted a beer. And the government literally could not enforce the prohibition on alcohol. And in the time that they had this moral law to keep people from drinking alcohol, they managed to create the empire of organized crime. And the same thing is happening with cocaine. A guy in the jungle with a, you know, Swami shirt on someplace is going to wind up ruling half the world because somebody decided that cocaine was a moral problem. Cocaine used to be an ingredient in Coca-Cola. Was it a moral problem then?
All right, that's well spoken, and that distinguishes the difference between you and LaRouche, because he thinks the solution is to continue banning it.
It won't
work.
And
that feeds the problem, yes. You've made that clear. I'd like to go into the satire you do. You emphasize, or I guess you're known for polyrhythmic approach to composing. I have read a recent interview where you talked about working with harmonic and melodic and rhythmic elements. But for many interviews, I've noticed you emphasizing the multi-rhythms, the polyrhythms. Do you see that society is hypnotized by a beat, by a rhythm, by a hypnosis that you feel you can shake up the polyrhythms?
Real simple, but real complicated at the same time. There are certain basic natural rhythms. How often does the moon become full? Once a month, okay? That's a rhythm. When does the tide come in? When does it go out? That's a rhythm. What is your heartbeat rate? That's a rhythm. These are all, call those natural rhythms. You don't think about them, but they're there. There's also a basic, let's call it an average tempo at which people conduct their lives. That is a rhythm. If that average didn't exist, then people wouldn't know whether or not they were going fast or going slow, because those are terms which are used to compare to an average. I'm having a slow day. That means you're behaving less than your imaginary average. I'm really getting a lot done today. You're going faster than your imaginary average. Okay. Now, music, the way in which it connects with the human behavior, takes into account the implications of these natural rhythms, universal natural rhythms. Certain types of music reinforce them. Disco music, for example, okay? That is banging you over the head and reinforcing your factory rhythm. Anything that deviates from that reinforcement of your factory rhythm could be perceived as rhythmically dissonant. So, dissonance, if you understand the whole idea of dissonance, dissonance, when resolved, is like having an itch and getting the scratcher. Dissonance, when it's unresolved, is like having a headache for life. So, the most interesting music, as far as I'm concerned, is music in which dissonance is created, sustained for the proper amount of time, and resolved, and got you scratch, and next case. So, the concept of dissonance in my work works on a lot of different levels. You can have rhythmic dissonance. Any rhythm which goes against the grain of a natural rhythm is going to be disturbing for the period at which the dissonance exists. Once you get back to that downbeat, you can then look back and say, hey, that was quite fascinating what happened there. I didn't know that you could squeeze all those beats into that one factory cycle. Okay? Same thing with harmony. Certain chords, when you hear them, it's like, ah, we're now relaxed because all the harmonics have lined up from here to there and it's all complete, and it's like a nice big C major chord and just like a drone that they give you in New Age music. It just makes your brain sit still. That's the reason it makes your brain sit still. It's like, it's all there. There's nothing else to do. It's done. Now, how long can you listen to that? A long time if you're very closely related to a jellyfish. But if you in that harmonic environment, if you include some irritating notes, notes which are not part of the harmonic structure, so long as the note then moves to one of the partials in that static chord, like certain notes want to move upward, some want to move downward, some can actually live in there at a lower volume and just be like a pollutant in the chord, you know, giving texture to the chord. All that stuff is part of the skill of writing music. But unless you understand why you're doing it and how long it lasts is very important too, because, you know, after it's only interesting for a certain period of time, then after that it's obnoxious. So that's what I do when I put stuff together. Same thing with words. You have to understand the overall concepts of natural rhythms, things which exist and people that take for granted, and the idea that one can create an artificial irritation for a certain period of time to give a pleasurable sensation when it stops. It's like a kid banging himself on the hammer. Why are you doing that? Because it feels good when I stop. Okay? And in medicine, it's like people who want to be young again, they're going to get their face sandblasted. You know? That probably doesn't feel very good, but when it's all over, they look like Mick Jagger.
I got to get this out of me. Okay.
So if she's a doctor, she can help you.
Well, that's why I'm doing it on her. Absorb it. No, I've been using it if you're holding in. Okay.
Is there smoke bothering her? Want me to open the door?
No, I have. Well, if you don't mind, yeah, just open the door. Circulation. I mean, I'm too used to smoke. I already had another irritation, but maybe the smoke's aggravating me.
Well, it feels really good when I
put it out. There it is. Point eight. Case closed. Oh, just fell over. Yeah, I remember an interview you did for some station in Canada where someone asked you, what do you really want to know, Frank? And you turned. It was the one where you interviewed yourself. You turned to the side and went, what time is it? Now, that is what you've just explained, the importance of timing and time and the model of the audience you're targeting or what you're trying to create. So that is what you want to know, what time it is.
Well, I think that's what everybody wants to know if you get right down to it.
You mean personally whether they're going to meet their maker?
No, I don't think that's... to live your life in planning for this good time you're going to have in the sky. I mean, there are certain religions which emphasize that more than others. I believe the Mormons have this proposition